Chapter 16. Pitt lost count of the number of times he struggled up from the dark mist, only to slip off the top rung of consciousness and fall back into the black void. People, voices, and scenes barreled through his mind in a disjointed swirl of kaleidoscopic confusion. He tried to slow down the blur of images, but the crazy vision persisted. When he opened his eyes to erase the nightmare from his mind, he saw the nightmare itself, the bestial yellow eyes of Delphi. "Good morning, Mr. Pitt," Delphi said dryly. The tone was courteous, but the hatred was manifest in the icy lines of the face. "I regret your injuries, but you can hardly sue for damages, can you? You neglected to post no trespassing signs." Pitt's voice came through his ears like the halting speech of a senile man. "An oversight. But then no one invited you to blunder into our power turbine's exhaust current." "Power turbine?" "Yes." Delphi seemed to relish Pitt's questioning look. "There are over 4 miles of tunnels here in my sanctuary, and, as you've noticed, it can be rather cold. Therefore, we require an extensive heating and electrical supply as only steam turbines can produce." "All the comforts of home," Pitt mumbled, still trying to clear his head. "I take it they're responsible for the surface fog." "Yes, the vented heat from their power plants coming in contact with the cooler water causes a mist-like condensation. Presto. Instant fog bank." Pitt pushed himself upright to a sitting position. He tried to read the hands on his watch, but the dial was a blur. "How long have I been out?" "You were discovered in my daughter's sleeping quarters precisely 40 minutes ago." Delphi stared speculatively at Pitt's bruised and scarred body, betraying no degree of emotion or concern. "A nasty habit of mine," Pitt said, smiling. "Always showing up in ladies' bedrooms at inconvenient times." Delphi maintained his bland expression. The silver-haired giant sat on a white, sculptured stone couch lined with red satin cushions, while Pitt noted wryly that he was delegated to the cold, marble-smooth floor. He ignored Delphi for a moment and took in the surroundings. It looked like one of those futuristic displays at world expositions. The room was of comfortable proportions, about 25 feet square, with walls decorated with original oil paintings of seascapes grouped in neat but casual array. Incandescent lighting came from rounded brass fixtures beamed at a white ceiling. Toward the far wall was a broad walnut desk with a red leather top, handsome matching desk furniture, and a modern and expensive intercom. But the unique innovation that set the room apart from anything that might even slightly resemble it was the large transparent portal into the sea. It was an arch nearly 10 feet wide and 8 feet high. Through the thick, clear crystal, Pitt could see a garden of spiral and mushroom-shaped rocks that were outlined by underwater lights. An 8-foot moray eel slithered along the lower edge of the portal and cast a stony eye at the occupants of the room. Delphi did not notice the eel. The golden eyes beneath his half-closed lids were still aimed at Pitt. Pitt's gaze wandered back to Delphi. "You don't seem talkative this morning." Delphi smiled. "Perhaps you're concerned with the fate of your friend." "Friend? I don't know what you're talking about." "The man with the injured feet. You left him in an abandoned passageway. Litter is everywhere these days." "It's stupid of you to continue your display of ignorance. My men have discovered your aircraft." "Another bad habit, I double park." Delphi ignored the remark. "You have exactly 30 seconds to tell me what you're doing here." "Okay, I'll tell all," Pitt said randomly. "I chartered a plane to fly to Las Vegas on the special casino tour, and we got lost. That's all there is to it, I swear." "Very witty," Delphi said wearily. "Later, you'll be begging for mercy." "I've always wondered how I'd bear up under torture." "Well, not you, Pitt." "I wouldn't consider causing you the slightest discomfort. There are several more refined methods of getting at the truth." Delphi rose from the couch and bent over the intercom. "Bring me the other." He straightened and offered Pitt a rigidly fixed and lifeless smile. "Make yourself comfortable. I promise the wait will be short." Pitt rose awkwardly to his feet. He should have been reeling from dizziness and exhaustion. Yet, Unaccountably, the adrenaline began to pump and his mind ran sharp. He stole a glance at his watch. It read 0410. 50 minutes until the Marines attacked the transmitter on Maui. 50 minutes until the monitor blew the seamount into gravel. There was little chance of getting out alive now. The sacrifice would be worth it, he thought grimly, if only Crowhaven got the Starbuck underway. He closed his eyes and tried to imagine the Starbuck cutting a course through the ocean back to Hawaii, but somehow the picture wouldn't come. Crowhaven could not remember when he had seen so much blood. The deck of the control room was coated with it, while several places along the electrical panels were splattered wildly in the manner of a Jackson Pollock abstract painting. Things had gone smoothly at first, too smoothly. The entry into the aft storage compartment had gone off without opposition. They'd even had time to remove their diving gear and take a short breather. But when the advance party of SEALs crept into the Starbuck's control room, hell broke loose. For Crowhaven, the next 4 minutes were the most frightening of his life. 4 minutes of ear-splitting thunder spouting from the automatic weapons in the hands of the SEALs. 4 minutes of groans and cries that amplified and echoed around the steel-walled interior of the sunken submarine. Delphi's men were firing their strange, silent guns until cut down by no less than 6 to 8 solid hits from the SEALs' rapid-fire weapons. He wondered how it was possible for anyone to stand up to such punishment unless they had gone mad. 3 men were killed outright, and the other 4 had died since his message to Hunter. Nothing could have saved them. As for his side, 1 SEAL was dead. 1 of those bastards lying on the deck had struck him through the left temple, and 3 more were wounded seriously. Gritting their teeth against the pain, they were secure in the knowledge that he, Crowhaven the Wizard, was going to raise this big steel death trap and get them proper medical treatment faster than a speeding bullet. But he was already 14 minutes behind schedule. He was sorry he'd put his foot in his mouth by promising Admiral Hunter to have the Starbuck underway by 0400. It was the suction. 6 months of lying on the bottom of the ocean had built up a staggering suction around the hull. All the ballast vents had been blown, but it hadn't been enough to break away from the clutching grip of the seafloor. He began to wonder bleakly if they were going to meet the same fate as the Starbuck's original crew. His second in command, a scowling chief petty officer, approached. There's nothing left to dump, Commander. Main ballast tanks are empty, and all diesel fuel and freshwater tanks have been blown. She still won't budge, sir. Crowhaven kicked the chart table like an unruly child. No, by God, she's going to move if I have to tear the guts out of her. He stared at the chief with a withering gaze. Full astern. The chief's eyes widened. Sir? I ordered full astern, damn it. Begging the commander's pardon, that'll beat the hell out of the screws, sir. They're half stuck in the seabed now, and there's a good chance we'd shear a shaft. It beats the hell out of dying, Crowhaven said curtly. We'll kick this mother out of here as though she were a mule in a swamp. No more arguments, chief. Give me full astern for 5 seconds, and then jam her full ahead for 5 seconds. Keep repeating the process until we bust her into scrap or she breaks free. The chief shrugged in defeat and hurried off to the engine room. After the turbines were engaged, it took only 30 seconds before the first dire report came into the control room. Engine room, Commander, the chief's voice carried through the speaker. She can't take much more. We've already bent the screw blades, twisting them into the sand. They're out of balance and vibrating like crazy. Keep at it, Crowhaven snapped over the microphone. He didn't have to be told. He could feel the deck shuddering beneath his feet as the giant propellers pounded themselves against the bottom. Crowhaven stepped over to a young, red-haired, freckle-faced man standing in front of several deck-to-ceiling control panels, intently studying the massive banks of gauges and colored lights. His face was pale and he was mumbling softly to himself. Crowhaven guessed he was praying. He put his hand on the technician's shoulder and said, "Next time we come up on full astern, blow all the forward torpedo tubes." "Think that will help, sir?" The voice was imploring. "It's only a drop in the bucket pressure-wise, but I'm willing to snatch at any straw." The chief's voice came through from the engine room again. "The starboard shaft just went, Commander. Broke clean through aft of the seal. Took 2 bearings with it." "Maintain procedure," Crowhaven came back. "But, sir," the chief's voice was pleading, desperate, "what if the port shaft goes? Even if we break free to the surface, how do we make headway?" We row, Crowhaven said curtly. I repeat, maintain procedure. If both propeller shafts were going to shear, they were going to shear. But until the port shaft went with the starboard, he'd rip it to pieces while he still had a chance at saving the Starbuck and his crew. God, he wondered, how could so much go so wrong at the very last minute? Lieutenant Robert M. Buckmaster, USMC, unleashed a short burst from his automatic rifle at a concrete bunker and wondered the same thing. The best-laid plans of mice and men, he thought. The operation should have been simple. Take the transmitter, his orders said. A group of Navy men were still hidden in the tropical underbrush, waiting for word of the capture, so they could commandeer the equipment and send the coded messages that Buckmaster didn't understand. Marine lieutenants were seldom privy to classified information, he mused. It's okay to get killed, but it's not okay to know why. The old Army installation on the northwest tip of Maui had looked deserted and innocent enough, but the instant his squad began infiltrating the perimeter, they'd run into more detection and warning gear than surrounded the gold depository at Fort Knox. Electrified wire, light beams which activated ear-blasting sirens, and bright flood lamps drenching the entire installation in a blinding, naked glare. Nothing in his briefing had prepared him for this, he thought angrily. Sloppy planning. No detailed warning of the obstacles. Lieutenant or not, he was personally going to read the riot act to his commanding officers for causing this mess. From windows, doorways, and rooftops that had seemed empty only moments earlier, the defenders opened up with a heavy burst of automatic weapons fire, halting Buckmaster's commando force in their tracks. The Marines answered back, and their aim had been deadly. The bodies were beginning to pile up around the bunker-like openings. At the height of the battle, a burly, grizzled-looking sergeant ran through the shadows cast by the flood lamps and threw himself down on the ground next to Buckmaster. I pulled one of their guns off a dead body, he shouted above the din. It's a Russian ZZK Kalashrev. Russian? Buckmaster echoed incredulously. Yes, sir. The sergeant held up the automatic weapon in front of Buckmaster's eyes. It's the newest light arm in the Soviet arsenal. Beats the hell out of me how these guys got hold of them. Save it for the intelligence section. Buckmaster turned his attention back to the transmitter buildings as the noise of firing increased in the darkness. Corporal Danzig and his squad are pinned down behind a retaining wall. The sergeant broke off to fire a series of short bursts to draw some of the defenders' attention. I'd give up retirement for a 90-millimeter tank buster, he yelled between bursts. This was supposed to be a surprise assault, remember? They told us we wouldn't need any heavy armament. Suddenly there was a tremendous explosion. A huge cloud of dust billowed up and chunks of concrete fell over the area like hail. The shock of the concussion made Buckmaster gasp. Then he slowly rose to his feet and stared at the shambles of the transmitter buildings. Radio, he shouted. Damn it, where's the radio man? A Marine with a blackened face, clad in black and green camouflage fatigues, raced from the shadows. Here, Lieutenant. Lieutenant Buckmaster took the offered receiver, dreading what he had to say. Big Daddy. Big Daddy, this is Mad Chopper, over. This is Big Daddy, Mad Chopper. Go ahead, over. The voice in the receiver sounded as though it were coming from the bottom of a well. The gang down the block blew the deal right in our faces. I repeat, blew the deal right in our faces. We won't tune in the news tonight. Big Daddy understands, Mad Chopper. He sends his regrets, over and out. Buckmaster jammed the receiver back in its cradle. He was mad, and he didn't care if they knew it all the way back to the Pentagon. Something had gone terribly wrong here tonight. The whole atmosphere had an ominous stink about it. He vaguely wondered, as his men began regrouping, whether he would ever know who had gotten the short end of the stick.